Welcome in, everyone. You're listening to The Hours. We're glad you're here. Tyler, glad to spend some time with you, and let's jump right in. I want to talk about Lock Left, because last episode we were together, we talked a lot of driving space, racing space, and we promised to talk defense. So if you want the offensive conversation, you didn't hear it, go back two episodes ago. The previous episode was with Tyler and Edward. They talked about player development. It was really good. So today, let's talk defense, and specifically Lock Left. I want to go through some maybe misconceptions or just questions around Lock Left, because I think it'll serve the coaches that are currently running Lock Left, or if you're wanting to dip your toe in the water, this will give you more perspective on Lock Left. Tyler, before I put you on the hot seat, you got anything?
It's early morning. I've got a cup of coffee. I've got a comfy chair, and I'm talking about something I care about with a friend. This is The Hours. You know, like if we didn't have anything else to do today, we'd probably choose to do this. So thank you for anybody that's choosing to do this with us, for hanging out. That's The Hours. It's The Hours. Let's spend an hour together or less. We'll see. So I just continue. I'm a big, why are we doing this? Whenever I do anything in life or we do anything, I'm like, why am I doing this? Why is that person here? Why do they think that's going to work? Just a healthy skepticism. So even as you were introing, I'm like, why am I doing this? And then I just wanted to articulate. So thanks.
Good. Yeah, I would say I would be grateful for this time with you and also just for the content and the value it provides. We just did some training with the athletic department. Tyler talked about identity. It's one of our core values at Savvy. It is what the I stands for. And we ended with talking about gratefulness. And one thing I really took away from just time that I spend with you in person is you talking about just being grateful, right? We do gratitudes. You did it with your family, really stuck with me, started doing it with my family. And I heard a new definition of gratefulness that I'll share with you and everyone else. It is living with a spirit of thankfulness. I think most of the time when we think of gratitude, it's being thankful or appreciative for the good things in life. But can we, and this is what actually, Tyler, you kind of challenged this athletic department that we were talking about with, is can we flip our mindset or the lens in which we look at things and actually be grateful for the adversity, for the hard things in life, because we believe that adversity strengthens. So living with a spirit of thankfulness is really being grateful for everything, whether it's good or bad. I know a lot of times when I think about what I'm grateful for, it's all good things. So I'm challenging myself to be thankful or grateful for the things that aren't great in my life, because we'll come out better on the other side, or there's some type of challenge there that we have to overcome, or something that needs to be refined, and being grateful is a good way to identify those things.
That's good. I would just encourage everyone to just pause for 5 seconds right now and live in some gratitude for a moment. Yesterday on the way to a basketball event with my daughter had a really poor attitude and was stressing out and was upset and acted out of that hard place and like said some really mean and nasty things, which really angered and frustrated me really bad. Right. And, you know, we had to fight for teaching. We had to, you know, fight for behavior. It was really rough. This morning she comes out of her bedroom and like, just in like the sweetest heart state, apologized for that attitude, committed to doing better. And it was like, oh, what a wonderful moment. As a parent, I think we've all been in there. We wouldn't have had that wonderful moment without that really low moment as well. So if we can somehow like hope for that future, we can be grateful in the adversity. And so I think a lot of times we just live in the challenge or the negative moment, but if we can live in a place of hope, right? Like I hope for that heart change, then it might change and be grateful. It changes to being grateful in the moment. So that's all about Lock Left defense. Yeah. Let's go. appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, I'll put you on the hot seat now. I'll challenge all of our listeners, take 5 seconds to hit the like button, hit the share button, share the podcast with the coach that needs to hear. Okay, so Tyler, let's make this a game, and you can make this game however you want. You take it wherever you want. I'll just say a misconception, and you tell me your thoughts when you hear this misconception and how it applies to Lock Left. Okay, First one, I like lock left. It's a lot of L's, but I want to play zone and I can't run lock left while playing zone.
It doesn't matter what you like. It matters what works. So, I mean, I think that's like a huge misconception in defense in general. I, as a coach, like this thing. Well, if you really, really like bread, but you're gluten intolerant, you should probably just stop eating bread. It doesn't matter what you like. It's really bad for you, and it's leading to all sorts of health problems. What people like in life should matter a lot less to them, and what brings them closer to their goals, dreams, aspirations, brings them closer to the person they're trying to become, the coach trying to become, the team they're trying to become, should really matter a lot more. We like people that like us or are like us, you know? And so like, that's it, right. And then if not, we're like, when we give people advice, really the most common advice is to make those people do more of what we want them to do. And so if you flip that to like your defensive system or the lock left or zone or whatever, just attempt to start from a different place. Don't start from a place of preference. Start from a place of data and start from a place of like, what's the objective here? So like, okay, what's your objective of your defense? Okay, and then what gets you to that objective? You know, we like comfort, and the human brain has been wired, and some might even say has evolved, in order to keep us safe. And so what we like is what's comfortable, because comfortable equals safe. What we don't like is uncomfortable, because uncomfortable is we might die, like it's a little painful, right? So I think sometimes we have to try to unlearn some things and rewire our brain. And this goes back to the adversity, the A in savvy, adversity strengthens. Like, lean into adversity, because adversity equals growth. Adversity equals performance, whereas comfort tends to equal stagnation. So that would be what I'd say. Oh, so you like zone? And then I think if you want to like not be philosophical, if you like zone, lock left is zone.
You can run lock left while playing zone, right?
Yeah.
What if you could pick, let's say you liked zone or you preferred zone, you want to run zone, the numbers tell you that you need to run zone. What zone would you pick if you were going to combine it with a lock left?
Okay, so what zone do I pick? Are we talking about a formation, a shape on the floor?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna push back on that as well, because I don't think that really matters nearly as much as traditional basketball says, oh, it's a 2-3 zone, it's a 3-2 zone, it's a 1-3-1 zone, right? And that's actually not what type of zone it is. I think that there's three other things that matter more than your starting shape of your zone. And I don't think these things, I would actually put your zone into these three categories before I put it into shape. Number one is going to be pressure level. Like, what level of pressure is your zone? Is it a zone that is like, and pressure just comes to what you're trying to take away, right? So like, is it a very, very squeezed and packed inside the arc zone? It doesn't matter what shape you are, if that's like your outcome, or is it a very, very extended high pressure zone? Okay. Second question on your zone. Okay. What's your zone trying to take away? Is your zone trying to take away shots, passes, or dribbles? What's it trying to take away as its first thing? That's a more important category than what shape you're in. It will determine your player's decisions, development, and your impact way more than the shape that you're in. And then the last thing that I would ask, you know, kind of about your zone is, okay, where are we trying to put the ball? Where are we trying to keep the ball on the zone? Right? As opposed, like, and it doesn't matter, any shape can do any one of those things. Some of them might fit your personnel a little bit better. Some of the shapes might fit those desires and goals a little bit better, but start there. Don't start with the shape. Again, that's just a preference thing, right? So let me just ask you, Mark, you're as a coach, based on what you believe about basketball and why, what's the pressure level of your zone from high to conservative?
If I'm going to play it, well, it depends on why I'm playing zone to begin with. I think there's two different reasons why you would play zone. Is you want it to be like your base defense. If it was my base defense, I would go high level of pressure. I would want to be disruptive. I would want to impact the game. And I want to dictate the terms.
Beautiful. Okay. Every coach listening, make that call and decision for you right now. You're always evaluating as a coach with any system that you're implementing, the risk versus the reward. Right? the higher the risk that you're taking, the higher the reward, but also the higher the chance that you are going to lose, right? Or you can lower your risk level. You're going to get less rewards and you're going to have less opportunity to be compromised as well. So you're always evaluating that. So with a high pressured answer, Mark is just opting for a higher risk reward ratio, right? What's the risk? The risk is we're going to give up good shots at the rim for the opponent, advantages on the catch for the opponent. What's the reward? The reward is more likely to generate turnovers, and we're more likely to generate poor shot selection as well, as we're going to put them in more decision-making situations. So you got to decide that first. It doesn't matter what shape you're in. Okay, second, Mark, what are you going to contest? You can't contest everything. Are you going to prioritize contesting? These are the three main things. Are you going to contest shots, dribbles, or passes? What do you really want to go and battle for and contest?
I would actually, I'll start with what I would not contest. Okay. I would actually want to make the ball play off the dribble. Mm-hmm. Because you said it, I want to force offense into more decisions. I want the game to look like the way we practice, and we practice a ton of decisions off the drive. So I'm going to test your team's ability to play off the bounce and make decisions on the fly. Second thing is I would not choose to contest shots as much as I would choose to eliminate shots that we don't want to allow. And I would actually allow you, instead of contest, to take the shots that we want. Not that we're going to give you wide open ones, but I would look at it through a lens of we're going to eliminate the shots we don't want you to take. So I would contest passes.
That would be my answer as well. And all of these answers, just, you know, we do this every time. Let's get through a whole bunch of mailbag questions.
I do have more for you.
Okay, but I would agree, passes. So these answers are what created Lock Left. So like there's Carleton University, Dave Smart, years and years ago, they started this idea of Force Week, okay? Force Week is not Lock Left because they have different answers to these questions, right? And then I'm actually going to say this, in my perception, there out there, there's this thing called Man Left, and I've looked at it. In my perception, it's an absolute ripoff of Lock Left. It's just like they put everything from Lock Left into ChatGPT and said, oh, how can we name it something different? It's Man Left. But even in looking through it, they actually don't answer these questions very clearly either, because the answers to these questions will determine your version of Lock Left. And that's really what we do in our Lock Left course as we go through the 10 layers, is we ask you a series of questions. We propose a series of solutions. And at the end of the 10 layers, you have your Lock Left. You don't have my Lock Left. You don't have Mark's Lock Left. You don't have Dave Smart's Lock Left. You don't have the ChatGPT version of Lock Left. You got your version of Lock Left. That's what we're about at Savvy Coaching, is helping you own your systems, right? And Lock Left is the base. Now, how do you start getting these answers? Well, if you don't know, you copy someone that you respect. So if you respect Mark, copy his answers. If you respect me, copy my answer. If you respect ChatGPT, you know, copy their answers. And then when you do that enough, then all of a sudden you'll have your own answers that might be a little bit different. It just takes time. But like our goal at Savvy is to help you collapse the time frame that it takes for you to get to a place of mastery in your own creative variation. For most coaches, it takes 20 years as they just stumble through it, you know, in the dark with their hands out in front so they don't run into a wall. Well, we're going to give you a pathway that means you're not going to run into a wall and hurt yourself, right? But eventually you're going to learn how to see in the dark. And when you can see in the dark is when you can create your own stuff. So I agree. I would also contest passes, and that's where we created, you know, my answers, our answers to the Lock Left from. Okay. And the last question is, where do you want the ball on the floor? Many traditional defenses want the ball outside the three-point line. That's just where they want it. They don't want the ball inside the three-point line, like a pack line defense or many others, right? That's where they want the ball. Mark, where would you want the ball?
In terms of Lock Left, I would want it on the left side in jail.
Right, but where would you want the ball if you're just building defense?
I would want the ball on the left side in jail.
Okay, nice. And we call that jail. We've named it jail. Is actually the left sideline below the free throw line extended. We call that jail because you have the least areas to escape, right? You've got two sidelines, right? We can load up and keep it in jail. That's where we want it. So yeah, in transition, we start at left, right? We want to speed it left, and then we want to lock it left, and we'll put the ball in jail. And like, I've just found that, you know, we do it so much on offense, like we'll put little pieces of tape on the floor or whatever. It's like, this is our shape. So why don't we do it on defense as well? People need targets, right? For nines, we've given them a target. Get a foot in the smile. That's how you know it's a nine. Like, you've got a target to try to get to on offense. So I found that, like, taping up jail and it's like, get the ball here on defense really, really helps players then provide all of their solutions. So, all right, you've answered those questions for your zone defense, right? So then you will probably realize, like, the shape doesn't actually matter that much, because we're going to be morphing and adjusting the shape throughout the entire possession. It's really just, what are our starting spots? And then you probably will have some really obvious starting spots. So what would be, if you had to play a zone, what would be your starting spots, or what would be the shape you would start from?
I would cheat and play a matchup zone, and just we have the next player. We've played, but I'll give you a real answer here. We've played different types of zone. I've been a base man-to-man coach. I do think one thing, you know, the game has changed. So as everything changes, I feel like there's just like an extreme end and it boomerangs back. We're in this like extreme version or shift of offense where it's just space and drive the ball. Well, I think that might lend itself to maybe play more zone. And so if I would do it based on likely my personnel or what, and I would maybe look at it through the lens of rebounding. What gives us the best chance to rebound out of this zone? If I had to pick one, I kind of like a 1-2-2, but we've had some success with a 2-3, not a big zone guy. So it's a hard question for me to answer, to be honest. But my real answer, if I had to choose something, it would just be a matchup zone, and we would match according to you.
Yeah, that would be my real answer too, which is what we teach in the lock left. It goes back to like my short answer is the lock left is a zone, actually. Most opposing coaches, when they first see a team running lock left, as I have taught it in our lock left course, you can go to lockleft.com right now. Get 3 free resources to learn more. It's a film breakdown, it's a 10-layer PDF, and it's a rebounding philosophy that we use in the lock left. Because I agree with you, like, rebounding is the most under-taught part of defense. I call it the third game. I think it's a game unto itself. And if your defensive philosophy doesn't completely align and prioritize your rebounding philosophy and system, I mean, gosh, you're going to be on defense a long time. So, but yeah, go to LockLeft right now, LockLeft.com right now, get those resources. But in the version that we sell of our course, when a coach runs it and an opposing coach sees it for the first time after the game, they're like, what zone are you running? And so I would say LockLeft actually is a zone, because we teach it as a matchup zone as well. And you can trend either direction as you answer these questions.
Yeah, every defense, to sum up, they all give something up and take something away. Those are the two just main questions that I would encourage all coaches to answer. What am I willing to give up, and what do I want to take away? And then anytime you're an invasion sport, you talked about on offense, we're so meticulous as coaches about, like, this is where we're going to be. This is our shape. This is our alignment. This is where we space. We should dictate where the ball goes as well defensively. Any invasion sport, football, lacrosse, basketball, hockey, you're fighting for time and space. That's all you're really competing for. That is the game within the game. If you win time, if you win space, you win the possession.
Is ultimate frisbee an invasion sport?
Yeah,
I agree. Actually, so I was in LA at the school games thing, and one of the other sport creators that won the school games or this platform we're on is an ultimate frisbee coach. He's like the top authority in the world on ultimate frisbee. And we were talking, ultimate frisbee is really like basketball. So gosh, I can't remember the word. He had a really good word. I wrote it down. I'll look. But they lock left in ultimate frisbee. And so it's when they're guarding the frisbee or the ball, and they only have a pivot foot. It's called, it's called maybe shading or something. But like, most ultimate frisbee players are right-handed, which means they only throw the frisbee at their right hand. So they sit on the right shoulder on the frisbee thrower guy. And like we were talking, and then that allows everyone else behind them to load up to that one side of the field, because the on I'm called ball. The on-ball defender is like cutting off half the field at all times so they can only pass to half the field. It's locked left. It's like, you know, like that's all we're trying to do. Can we cut off half the court so we guard less space? Gosh, I'm getting fired up here. Yeah, I think every invasion sport should lock left, or at least lock somewhere.
Even like football, the way your cornerbacks play, you're either funneling it to the boundary or you're funneling it to the inside. It's like you just want to dictate the terms, right? You don't want to be the reactor. You should attack with and without the ball in an invasion sport. What if we shifted our mindset to we're always on offense? You know, when we're on defense, we're attacking, we're making you make, like we're blitzing, right? Putting as much pressure as we can, or cutting the floor, forcing the ball or whatever, one way. That way, our job becomes very simple. We can single task. If I'm on the ball, I lock the ball. If I'm on the jail side, I plug the gap. If I'm on the free side, I hunt the pass. That is it. So you got one job.
If you don't know what those terms are, go to lockleft.com, put in your email, and you'll get the 10-page PDF that defines all those terms as well.
Okay. Here's another misconception. You kind of talked about other versions of lock left. I have spoke with coaches that dismiss lock left as like, oh yeah, we run lock left. We shade the ball handler to the left side. So the misconception would be it's only about the ball handler. I'll kind of answer this one. We just went over it. There are principles of play that are at fit together to actually become a defensive system, where one principle complements the next one, just like the lacrosse or the ultimate frisbee that you were talking about. If we're shading the right hand, well, that means we can load up to the left side and lock left. We would call that plug the gap, right? And building a wall, we're loading up to the side that we know that the ball is going. So I probably hit that one. Maybe you can
let me hit that one harder and different.
Okay.
Yes to everything Mark said. And if you think you're running a lock left, you're not. I can just say that pretty confidently because the teams that I actually provide film feedback on that are in our community aren't actually locking the ball. Like even like everything Mark said is correct, but I'm going to back it up to layer one. We shade left, then you're not running lock left. Lock left is not influence left. It's not shade left. It's no one ever dribbles right. No one ever dribbles right. And most people are like not far enough with their commitment to on the ball. Make the ball go. I'm teaching lock left to our 9 club teams. And the most common feedback and coaching I'm giving in games is get up, make the ball go. If someone can hold the ball, if someone can dribble at all to their right hand, you are not locking left. If you don't hate every time that someone dribbles to their right hand and the right side of the floor, you're not running lock left. And so, I mean, even in film, like I've never seen someone locking the ball enough on any film that I've given feedback on.
I would also say I've never seen a team hunt the pass well enough.
Never.
Right side.
That's layer one and layer two. Lock the ball, hunt the pass. I would also say I have never seen a team build the wall strong enough. And it's related. The more layer one, lock the ball left, so they must go left, right? Layer two, next to the ball, one pass away, right? Your job is to hunt passes, not dribbles. Like you're actually hunting passes, especially sniping or hunting the pass to the right-hand side, so no passes can go right. Well, once you do layer one and layer two, then the wall, the defender in the smile or your help side or low man or whatever you want to call it, then your wall needs to get super aggressive outside the smile to the jail side, right? The wall, I've never seen the wall that is aggressive enough and big enough. And as you are weaker blocking the ball, weaker hunting the pass, well, then you have to be more conservative building the wall. Everything's connected. Right, so those three things, the first three layers of lock left, like most teams don't commit all in enough on it.
That resonates with me because a lot of coaches will reach out and say, hey, I run drive in space. And I'm like, I bet you don't. I bet you run Rose series, or I bet you run dribble drive, but I bet you don't run drive in space because there's so much to it. And there's 1,000 different versions of drive in space because like all of our savvy systems, you make them your own, like Tyler said. Earlier. Another thing that I'll share with coaches, since we're talking defense, if you run lock left or any defense, I would build your philosophy from the goal out. So from the basket out, and Tyler said it, like if we're going to do all this stuff, we got to have a really aggressive wall defender. Okay. So we're going to build it from the basket out, but we install from the ball in. So we start layer one, lock the ball. Then we go to one pass away. Then we go to two or more passes away. But the philosophy is built from two or more passes away in, or out instead of in. Okay. Next one, Tyler, this is very related. And you kind of touched on this, so maybe you just expand on it a little bit. Here's a misconception I hear a lot of coaches say is, man, I like lock left, but I don't want to just allow the ball to be driven to the left side. Like, I just don't want to just let the ball be driven to the rim.
Why?
Yeah, I think they're what they're envisioning in their head is we're allowing the ball to be driven in for a big advantage layup.
Mm-hmm. Good. And I would say, show me. Show me, measure it, stat it. I've got shot charts from lock left teams that break down both like the number of attempts from the left side at the rim and from the right side at the rim. I think I've seen hundreds of these over games and over seasons. And I don't even have to convince you of this. Like, the attempts at the rim from the left side are nearly like half as effective, one half as effective, like from a field goal percentage standpoint, than attempts from the right side. Secondarily, the goal of building the wall is they never shoot an uncontested wide open layup at the rim. If they are, then your wall is not doing their job and your wall is weak. Lastly, we want to send the ball to jail, not to the rim. If they have a straight line drive to their left hand to the rim, then layer one is failing, right? So like there's lots of different layers to that. But even if they do have a straight line drive and they have to shoot a full speed layup at the rim with their left hand with the defender at least on their hip, if that is the worst outcome of a possession when you break down defensively, if that's your worst outcome, I don't mind that one. I personally don't mind that worst outcome, especially if it happens really fast and early, because I believe that your offensive system, your defensive system should be aligned and complement each other. We want to play really, really fast. Like, I just want the possession to end defensively. Ideally, it ends with our goal, which is number one goal to be a steal and a turnover, number one. Number two, I would love like a five from the left side of the floor. A five is a so-so shot, usually off the dribble in the mid-range outside of the rim. I would also call a five a no-advantage layup attempt from the left side where you've got a heavy wall who's fully contesting. So, like, we either get a steal or a five, ideally within the first 7 seconds of the shot clock. I don't want them to run offense. I don't want them to hold the ball. I just want to go so that we can then play fast, make or miss. And I have also found that if a team isn't used to shooting really quickly, their transition defense is really bad if you make them shoot quickly. Like, they're still trying to get set up in their offense. They're slow. And so, like, make or miss, let's get them to shoot really quick, even if it's a contested layup. And whether it's a defensive rebound or we take the ball out of the net, we're usually attacking with an advantage. And I would say that because we play this way all the time in practices and in games, we're going to score more efficiently in that game. You're shooting in 7 seconds and we're shooting in 7 seconds. We're going to get better shots in 7 seconds than you are over the course of the game, because how you practice is you're shooting after you run your offense. So that would be another goal of the lock left, is you don't get to do what you practice all the time. Most teams practice offense, not basketball.
Earlier you talked about matching just our defense and offense should complement each other. Completely agree. You know, there's other people that may disagree, and I try to come from a place of optimal and less optimal. Like, if you just, in my experience, I've lived this, I've coached it, I've lived with the consequences of doing both. When my offense and defensive philosophies matched, it was so much easier to run practice. It was so much easier to install our systems. And honestly, it was so much easier to win, because the game looked like practice. It just felt the way we wanted the game to feel. Think about this. Let's just use a nice round number. Let's say an average game, your opponent is used to playing 50 possessions. If you can get them playing 65 possessions, their best player is probably going to have one or two more fouls in which they average, you know, and you're accounting for that. Your players are conditioned to defend for 65 possessions. They're not. Their coach is not used to making subs and rotation patterns based on 65 possessions.
Yeah, the rotation patterns.
And then here's something else. It's kind of a misconception or a conversation that I have with coaches a lot is, especially conservative coaches, about your number one goal should be to force a turnover. Your job on defense is not to contest a shot. Your job on defense is to get the ball back. If you're a football fan and I said, well, your favorite football team's defense is going to allow the other team to throw the ball to the end zone for touchdowns or kick field goals for 3 points, you'd be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That doesn't sound good, right? We don't want to allow them to shoot and hope they miss or contest and hope that they miss. We got to get the ball back. That's what every defense is designed to do. Football defenses want to go three and out and force a punt immediately. We don't want to let them drive down the field, take some chances, put some pressure on us, and then get the ball back eventually. Let's try to get the ball back the second the possession changes. So that would be, you know, my additions there. I think everything you're saying, no matter what system that you run, coaches, if you're a lock left coach, if you're thinking about going lock left, or you just run some other version of your defense, I would still encourage you to start to look at defense through these lenses, because really, really good. And again, I've lived with the we're going to be more conservative because of all these excuses I can come up with. And then I live through this transformation of, you know what, we're just going to become the team that we're scared of. Like, I don't want to play the teams that pressure us. I would, if you could tell me, all right, a team is just going to make your game 32 or 40 minutes of hell and get out in passing lanes and make the ball go and be really aggressive, or you can play against a team that sits back, kind of lets you do what they want you to do, keep everything in front. That decision's pretty easy on what team I would rather play against. So let's be the team that we're scared to play against.
Yeah, do what you hate. Do what you hate. Absolutely. Another thing that I think might serve. So recently in our paid coaching community, I shared a new series, a new offensive series that I've been working on developing called High Series. And honestly, if you're not one of our members, that's one of the greatest benefits is every week there's new content being put out. Like, why should you be a member? Because you get new content hot off the press. Mark's sharing it, new drills, new offensive series and actions. Like, come join us. Head to savvycoach.com and you can join our community. You get everything, every course we've ever done, live training weekly with me and Mark. Our annual members get unlimited film breakdowns and feedback from Mark and myself. Come spend a year with us. It'll transform your coaching. It absolutely will. High Series. I'm sharing this new High Series. This series is a family of actions that share a trigger, like Mark's famous Rose series. It shares a trigger, a pass from one action spot to the other, right? That triggers Rose series. We have a trigger that triggers High Series when we're in neutral. So I just shared one of the actions in High Series. And one of our really committed coaches that's just all in on Savvy System, Coach Ryan Rush, he's like, oh, I haven't seen High Series before. Teach me more about High Series. Why do you run High Series? And I think my answer probably was a little bit surprising is, oh, I created this offensive series for our defense. We were running into lots of high ball screens. And I hadn't gotten to the layer of teaching our club teams how we actually defend high ball screens. I mean, we're switching because we switch everything and we were doing that, but we weren't executing how lock left defends ball screens, which honestly weakened down one of the later layers of lock left. It's so powerful. And we made it a layer because high ball screens are probably like the number one way in basketball teams create advantage. So your defense better have an answer for it. We didn't have an answer for it. So I created High Series and installed it. And I've actually been installing High Series across our entire academy for about 2 weeks in our player development skills sessions, in our team practices. I've just been installing High Series. So I have taught nothing over the past 2 weeks on how we defend a high ball screen in the lock left. Nothing. But guess what's happened over the past 2 weeks? Or don't. we've gotten better at defending high ball screens just because we're doing it, right? Now, this week, today, for the very first time, like, I don't have to teach high series anymore. I can just have our offense go and run high series, and they know how to execute it, and I can put all of my attention into priming and teaching how we're going to weaken down these high ball screens. But they already have, like, so much context built up. They've been developing their own solutions defensively within the lock left context. They know the ball's supposed to go to jail. Let's figure out a way to do it. And so that's what's really beautiful when your offense and defensive systems do connect, is when you're building your offense, your defense gets better, right? The quickest path to a better defense is better offense. And your quickest path to a better offense is better defense. And that's why we don't like to install things in isolation. Mark actually did, I actually did 3 minutes of 5-on-0 last practice. And, you know, I was like, okay, there's a reason for this. I'm justifying it. Anyway.
You said something really good there. The best way for a better defense is better offense. The best way for a better offense is better defense, right? It's easier to play offense from a turnover or a live ball rebound. So if you fix your defense, your offense automatically becomes better and vice versa. That is one thing I found in the value of doing our film breakdowns with our members is we just might be able to identify the root cause of coaches are really good at identifying the problem. We need to get better shots, or we need to create more advantages, or we need to play with more pace. And a lot of times we're focused so much on the problem, but not the root cause. Can we just give you one action item? What's the highest leverage thing that you can do to get the result that you want? That's the fun part for me of doing these film breakdowns for our members, is helping them shape their lens, but also just giving them something actionable that if you watch this film breakdown, you can go to practice and do this today and guarantee to get better results.
Become a member and get some film breakdown. I mean, that's my ask and challenge to every one of you. I promise we'll add value. And if we don't, fire us and we'll try to get better. Actually, right now, it's pretty fun. One of our members has a daughter who's a college basketball player, and he's using his film breakdown to get shot feedback for his daughter. And I mean, it pumps me up because, like, you know, we're starting to, you know, do these shot feedback. I'm actually jumping with her live. Oh, someone heard this. I don't know. I'm jumping on live with her today to, like, really understand her shot generation goals, because that's going to determine what we're going to try to prioritize and develop in her shots so she can actually generate more shots. She actually has a really good shooting stroke. I think she averaged like 1.5 shot attempts per game. Like, honestly, the problem isn't your shooting stroke. It doesn't matter. You have the prettiest shot in the world. If you're getting off 1.5 shots per game, you're not generating shots. So maybe there's a shot prep. There's a speed of release thing. There's, like, how are you actually training, generating your shots? Like, you aren't open enough. You aren't active enough. Like, we need to actually take a look at some film. We got to put together a plan for how you're going to generate more shots. Because if you can't generate shots, it doesn't matter if you can make shots. And so everything's connected. All that being said, like, when we're available to you, we're available to you. We're all in and committed to the success of the coaches that we get to coach. So come give us a shot. We'd love to do some film breakdown for you, your players, and your program.
Yeah. You invest in us, we invest in you.
Yeah. So,
all right, man. This was fun. Trying to poke some holes in lock left, hearing more about how it was built and the philosophy behind it and how it fits in with offense as well. So, Tyler.
Let me finish with this on lock left. Here's how you beat lock left. Here's the weakness of lock left. I'll tell the whole world, okay? Here's the whole world. To the whole world, here's how you beat lock left. Okay, good. Clear out the entire left-hand side of the floor. Put the ball in the hands of your absolute best ball handler. If they can't get downhill and beat their player one-on-one, come set a high ball screen with a rim roller and then a lift on the backside. You're going to have the most space and your biggest advantage, because that's how you beat any defense, is you have to have a lot of space and create an advantage. And that's the way to create an advantage in the lock left. And if you join the membership, I'll tell you how we combat that in the lock left. I'm not giving that away.
Yeah, I'll add this. If you want to beat lock left or any disruptive defensive system, teach conceptual offense. Because whenever I was coaching and we were being really disruptive and the other team could generate good shots through that disruption, I was like, ooh, okay, like, this is going to be a war. Or on the other hand, if we would create an advantage in our conceptual offense and drive in space, and we would drive, kick, and click, and then they would be there on the catch, I'm like, oh, okay, well, they play like we do. This is going to be really fun. You know, we've met our match, may the best team win. The games that we would honestly just dominate would be, oh, you can tell they don't play like us, but we're making them play like us.
Yeah. Beautiful.
All right. Cool. Thanks, Tyler. Appreciate y'all listening. Stay savvy.
Stay savvy.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.